Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Podcast Show. My name is Josh, and I'm your host, and I'm an entrepreneur too, and I travel around having conversations with entrepreneurs and people in the community who are building great stuff and who are helping support the entrepreneurial community. On today's show, we're going to have a conversation with Brent Henderson, who is the CEO and founder of an app called Zup. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Brent to the show. Brent, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for those listening into the audience, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I went to UCF here in Orlando, graduated in 2012, and ended up starting a company called Party Tutor while I was a student at UCF. And that had, you know, it was essentially solving my own problem as a college student, as a broke college student, trying to find deals and events happening around campus. And so that's how the idea came about, to create a centralized platform that would provide students with everything happening around campus. And that's definitely evolved over the years, been through a lot of ups and downs, and finally really found product market fit last year with a subscription model pivot. And so now we've got about 5,500 students paying us $5 a month to access those exclusive deals and different experiences that we're creating for them around campus.
Oh, right on. All right. So you had a problem. You were going to school, you're a college student, broke college student, you said, and you had a problem that you didn't know what was, you know, what were the cool things going on, or where were the deals in terms of the restaurants and foods and such like that. So you wanted to find these resources and it wasn't out there. There was nobody else doing something like you were doing, so you decided to build it on your own. What did that look like back in 2012?
Yeah, it was, I had, just to give you a little bit more backstory, I had had an internship going into my junior year with a finance company because I thought that I was going to go into finance and accounting, and I really couldn't breathe when I had that internship. And that's when I realized that I needed to start my own business. And I set a goal to start a company before the time I graduated, so that I could pursue that instead of, you know, going down the stereotypical 9-to-5 path for the next 40 years. So that internship propelled me into becoming much more ambitious and looking into entrepreneurship. And so I had set that goal to start a company before I graduated. So right when I got back from that internship, I went into ideating and essentially trying to listen and hear people whine about things. I was really attentive to that, even myself, because when people are whining about something, that means there's a problem that might be able to be solved. And so it really was me and some of my friends. I was living in a fraternity house at the time, and we were texting bartenders or checking Facebook events, and it just was really clear that all this information was decentralized, and this is when even BlackBerries were the most popular smartphone at that time. So it was really the beginning of the emergence of the smartphone. And so I kind of put those pieces together and said, you know, why wouldn't there be a mobile app that centralizes all of that? So I was definitely solving my own problem as a college student. And I didn't know how I was going to make money or how it was going to work. I just thought it was something that myself and a lot of my friends would use. So went from there.
And you thought you were going to go into finance. Like, let's just say entrepreneurship didn't happen to you. What did that career path look like for you?
I was pretty interested in stocks and investing. And so I would like to think that I would have, you know, gone into something in regard to finance and investing. And that might've been interesting for me, but I think I would have found out pretty quickly once I got into that field that I've got to do something that I'm really passionate about, that I believe is making an impact and changing people in a positive way. And I think I would have realized pretty quickly that investing and making money, make more money, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that I would have had a lack of sort of purpose in that. And I think that I would have probably struggled and I would have landed back in entrepreneurship. I would have found a way back in. So,
yeah. Now you said you couldn't breathe when you were doing the internship and looking for jobs and such. Describe to people out there, you know, what that feels like.
Yeah, I think it was the first time that I had really been awakened to that type of culture. I would also say that the company culture that I was working for was very, people weren't really excited to be there. And that was a big part of my lack of enthusiasm for it. So I just saw people not being excited to come into work and not a lot of camaraderie happening around the office. It was more so everyone was kind of heads down. You just got to do your job. And so I think that also made me a little bit frightened of that type of atmosphere. And so I certainly don't believe that most companies are like that, but that made it really a drag and really unexciting as a place to work. And I kind of ended up tying what that career path might look like, even though that's maybe not how every company operates.
Sure. Sure. So you set a goal for yourself. I'm going to build a company by this date. You started listening to people whining, including yourself, but there, you know, a lot of people, they avoid listening to people whining. You actually went after it, right? What was that like? You were sitting around like a therapist, like writing notes on like people's problems in terms of partying and nightlife and such like that. What did that look like to you?
Yeah, I think that once you set a goal, a lot of times the how reveals itself, you know? And I think that if you make everyone's entrepreneurial journey, I think, is very different. Some people stumble across it, and some people like myself became intentional in saying, I want to start a business. Let me find something to do. And my path, when you become intentional in making the choice that I want to create a product, I want to solve a problem, then you just become so aware of everything that's happening and so alert. So once you start looking for ideas, all these opportunities start coming at you.
Did you have a ton of different ideas, and how did you kind of narrow it down to Party Tutor? At the time it was Party Tutor.
Yeah. So I actually was journaling, and I still journal, which is a really helpful activity that I still do. But I have in my journal talking about my actual frustrations that I couldn't come up with an idea. So it took me about 5 months before I had the idea for Party Tutor. And during that time, it was actually very frustrating because I knew that I wanted to start something, but I felt that like my time was running out because it was taking so long. So I was still reading into entrepreneurship and developing my knowledge of starting a business during that period. But it was tough and challenging to find an idea. And I think that certain steps helped. Like I was looking at how to make money on the internet, how to start a business here. And so as I started to get a better grasp of the different ways that someone could create a business, that started to unlock new ideas. And, but ultimately I didn't have any good ideas. One of my ideas that I wrote down was a pool float that would massage you. That's how kind of outrageous and random my ideas were. I know it does, right? And I looked it up recently, and that actually exists. I don't know how it works, but it looks awesome. Okay. And so somebody ended up doing that. But I also noticed that ideas kind of build on top of each other. So one of my friends was coming into town, and we wanted to watch, you know, one of the NFL playoff games or something like that. And so I was thinking, all right, well, when he comes in town, where should we go? And I kind of realized that there wasn't really an easy way for me to find out which venues are going to be playing this particular game in my area. And so I thought about that maybe being something, you know, what if there was a website where people could see which games were going to be on TV at which bars. And ultimately I found that to be not a high enough frequency of usage to be a real product, but that idea kind of ended up helping to build onto my euphoric aha moment when I realized when it all kind of clicked together. So ideas, even though it might not seem like you're progressing, that was something that was on the right track for what I ultimately decided to move forward with.
Right on. You mentioned that you journal. This is a part of your world. Talk to us about when and why you started journaling. And then maybe walk us through. You don't have to read us your journal, because that might be way too private. There might be things that we don't want to know. But, yeah. You know, maybe why did you start journaling? What value do you think it has for you, maybe entrepreneurs? And then maybe walk through how you do it.
Yeah, so I think there has been periods of time where I've journaled every day, and there's been periods where I only journal once every couple months in the last few years. I don't remember who recommended that I journal, but I think I mostly thought it would be fun to be able to look back on my thoughts and ideas. So that was my main intention in starting to journal. But I have found that journaling allows you to release a lot of your ideas, and it's just a very health. Not only is it really enjoyable to kind of look back on your life and see where you came from and see and even become encouraged that this was a struggle and I got through it. And I see, you know, it's easy to connect the dots looking back. So, but I think it is a really healthy activity to kind of put your thoughts on paper. Especially, I just feel really good in the morning when I do that, and I just clear my head about what I'm thinking. And for a time period, there was a product they used called 750words.com, and the concept was to write 750 words every day and don't really think too much about organizing it, but just write whatever comes to your mind. And it's actually a form of meditation when you do it like that, because you're actually able to observe your thoughts, because you're just free flow writing, and you're able to observe your thoughts, and it's, you kind of can observe them from an external point of view, and it gives you a really unique perspective on how you're actually thinking in a new way. So I found that to be really beneficial when I was in a habit of doing that, and talking about it makes me think I need to get back to it. Yeah.
Well, it sounds unique coming from a, you know, a finance man, you know, major, you know, usually the brain is very analytical, very, you know, numbers driven. And it's neat to hear the introspective side of that. And man, if you think of like who recommended that to you throughout our conversation, or maybe what period of life you were in, you know, bring it back up, because I started journaling after a major financial failure in business, and I started journaling, and it's been very helpful. I don't make the same mistakes, and actually I've used it to help others. So I felt weird at first carrying around a little binder journaling, but I thought journaling was for, you know, 13-year-old girls, you know, but it's so powerful. And
So how often do you journal? Do you have a system for that, or is it just kind of whenever you have thoughts?
Yeah, right now it's whenever I have thoughts. A lot of times, like, thank you for asking. You know, like when you do podcast shows, very rarely does the guest, you know, like actually talk back. So I really appreciate this. Usually in the morning, I'll go for a run with my 1-year-old son, and I'll listen to a book. And then, you know, like when I'm doing my cool down, that's when I start journaling. So I actually do it digital. And I'll do like a voice memo or a voice to text, or I'll use Siri, and I'll just write down, like, just brain dump some of my stuff. But I typically do it, you know, a couple times a week in the morning, early morning.
That's cool. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever been asked a question before. Hey, this is really great. You should start a podcast show. So, all right. So you had this idea. You saw a gap in the marketplace because nobody was solving this problem. And you said, okay, I'm going to build this. What was the next step from there?
Yeah, so I think it's another one of those situations where when you have a why, or when you have a greater reason for doing something and desire, the how reveals itself. So I didn't know how to start a business. I didn't know how to create an app. But I did have one thing, and that was Google. You know, so it's pretty amazing what we have access to, as far as, even if we don't know how to do anything, we can learn things pretty quickly. So I just started Googling everything that I thought I needed to know, and I made a lot of first time entrepreneur mistakes along the way. But ultimately, I didn't have much money, of course, but I was able to use Elance at the time, which is now Upwork, which is a freelance website, and I found developers from India to build it for the Android and iPhone apps for less than $5,000. And I mean, I was using the tools and resources that I was able to use, such as, I think I made our first website designs in Microsoft Word. You know, it's extremely ugly, but it was something, you know. So you just have to use the resources that you have to kind of get something out there. Fortunately for me, you know, it's so important to build an MVP, especially with a tech product, so that you can build something very minimal that you can get out there and start testing. And the concept of college students wanting to know the specials that were happening around campus was very simple, so I couldn't really screw it up that much. I just had to make sure that I had a list, and I went out and kept those events and specials updated. So no matter how terrible the product looked, and it looked very terrible in the beginning, at least it was solving the right problem, and I was able to build from there.
Yeah. A lot of people are hesitant about getting that first MVP to the marketplace because it looks terrible, right? And they're like, well, as soon as I could afford a designer, or as soon as I could afford a marketing person, or this or that, and they always push off the MVP. You said you built it in Microsoft Word and you got it out there. And what was that like? What advice do you have for people who are sitting on a good idea that just looks ugly?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I do think there's a lot of power and impact that can happen. It is important in today's age to be, if you want people to take your product seriously, to have a decent design. But at the same time, the most important thing is that you're actually solving a problem. And the biggest mistake, I think, is people not honing in and doing one thing really, really well. So I think the most important thing when you're creating a product is figure out what the main problem is. And that obviously requires talking to your customers and getting really clear on that. But the greatest products in the world, they typically solve one thing, and they do that one thing really, really well. So you can get away with not having the best design if the problem you're solving is very clear and you are trying to be the best in the world at solving that one problem. So, you know, Uber, they get you from here to there with one press of a button. You know, their product hasn't changed that much ultimately from day one. And so, you know, Google, you can type in anything and it pops up with accurate results that are going to help you answer that question or find what you're looking for. You know, a lot of these products are very simple. And I think that when I started doing what 90% of college students wanted was just the drink specials around campus. But what I tried to create was food specials and late night specials and taxi rides and apartments around campus and deals for barbershops. And those are all things that are valuable to some extent, but at least starting off, I should have just had a list of the bars and then expanded and figured things out from there. So I could have saved a lot of time by just focusing on the main problem that needed to be solved.
Yeah, that's really good input. So when was it that the point where you started to actually, you had your MVP, like what was the first dollar you made using this product or creating this product?
Yeah, so I figured it was going to be an advertising model to start, but I knew that I needed somewhat of a user base to get it off the ground. So it launched in June of 2011, and then I started cold emailing some potential advertisers in 2 or 3 months later. And the first client that I had was iFly Indoor Skydiving in Orlando. So came up with a deal, and it was going to charge them $200 for the semester. And he basically said yes through email. And then I think I had gotten interest from someone else to advertise. And I was like, maybe I can charge more for this. And then when I got on the phone with iFly to kind of finalize some things, I said, yeah, I know. Basically, I had told him the new price was $350, and he's like, no, 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 that's not how you do business. And so he was really nice about it and still went through with the deal. But, I mean, he's right. You can't just change the price after you sent out a proposal. So I learned that lesson pretty quickly. So fortunately, he still wrote the check. So it was pretty cool to get a $200 check from creating something. It was a pretty special moment for that to arrive in the mail.
Oh, that's awesome. So that was your first piece of revenue was through that advertising.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many users did you have at that point, or what kind of traffic did you have? What kind of engagement did you have? Do you remember?
So I fell into the common first-time entrepreneur trap of if you build it, they will come. So I thought it was such a good idea, and it was going to grow so quick, and we were going to get to so many universities. And I thought that I had to launch multiple campuses at once because it was like such a good idea. And of course, day one, it's like, where's all the traffic? What's going on?
Where's everybody?
Yeah. And so I realized pretty quickly that I needed to be a lot more persistent and strategic about marketing it. And even if you've got the best idea in the world, hopefully you get it to spread by word of mouth very organically, but you still need some people to start off first that have it, that can then spread it. And so that was really important. So I did things like putting yard signs around campus, posting flyers in the stairwells at the parking garages around campus, and just really guerrilla marketing, really focused on guerrilla marketing, really cheap tactics, but that took hustle and got that off the ground. And so I think we probably had about 75 people, students using the app per day when I got that first deal.
Nice. That's pretty good. Yeah. So not only did you have to acquire the students, but you had to find the information about the drink specials and, you know, the skydiving, indoor skydiving, you know, specials. So you actually had to go to the business owners and talk to them about the product. What did that look like?
Yeah. So that was really hard for me. Myers-Briggs, I'm about 90% introverted. And so I'm the type of person who can sit behind a laptop and do design work and update content and all this stuff, no problem. But going out and doing door-to-door sales was a challenge for me to, and a fear for me to overcome. So I had kind of put that off until maybe 2 or 3 weeks before launch, and then started going around to businesses. Another big mistake. But again, you know, I knew what I wanted to happen. And so I had put myself in a position where I didn't have a choice but to go out to these businesses, even if I didn't want to. And so I ended up for 3 days straight or 4 days straight, I ended up knocking on doors and ended up getting 12 different restaurants to offer some exclusive deals. And they were not paying for it. I was just onboarding them to generate content. And so I continued to get better at that process and learn, but sales has always been something that's always been, you know, something that's uncomfortable that has become a lot more comfortable to me now. And, but you know, you're forced into, you've got to do what you got to do to get started, whether it's comfortable or not. And so I just kind of found ways to make that happen and got better at it.
Sure. So how is it being on a podcast show? Because right now you're on a podcast show and, you know, there's people watching, or not at this minute, but, you know, people will listen to this. How is that impacting an introvert, and why were you interested in doing this podcast interview?
Well, I'll answer the first question, which is how does it make an introvert feel? And I've definitely changed my, So the interesting thing about introvert versus extrovert is that it's important. It's a common misconception that introverts are quiet and reserved, which a lot of times is true. But the main aspect of that introversion versus extroversion is where you get your energy from. So as long as I spend some time alone, reading, writing, doing some of the things that fill me up, I can be extroverted in situations where I need to be. Like yesterday, we had an investor showcase where I pitched in front of 50 investors on stage. And that type of activity doesn't really drain me as long as I get the personal time, alone time as well. Whereas extroverts get energy, they need to be around people all the time. And not that they don't enjoy alone time too, but they can't be alone for too long. Otherwise, you know, so that's where you get energy from. So it's just having that balance is important. And then I've had a lot of speaking engagements over the last few years and I've just become really comfortable. And I would say that improv class has been the biggest benefit for overcoming, especially being on stage. So taking an improv class was hugely beneficial for building my confidence of being on stage and speaking. Nice. And then to answer your other question about this podcast particularly, I mean, I love Orlando. I plan on being here for a long time, and I love supporting the community and want to get more connected and support it however I can. So this is a fun podcast to be on.
We're honored to have you, man. So you took an improv class. What did that look like? And then maybe you could teach us something about improv and how it fits in the entrepreneurial community, if you remember.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few things. Improv was really fun. It's something that everyone can do. A lot of people think, oh, I could never do that. Oh, I'm not witty. So I'll tell you two things, important things that I learned. One is that, you know, you think that by doing improv, you've got to be witty. You've got to be someone who can really come up with things that are funny on the spot. And the reality of comedy and improv is that it's not so much about being really clever necessarily. It's more about being relevant. So if you say something that is relevant, if you point out the obvious of the things that happen in the world, and you'll notice this with comedians, most of what they talk about is things that we already know, and they're just pointing out the obvious, but it's the outrageous things in life that, you know, are just kind of funny. So as long as you can relate to people, if you can relate to culture and point out things, then people relate to that, you know. So it's so for example, you know, when I was on stage, some we were doing an improv skit, and somebody was talking about biscuits and cheese. It's a, you know, you'd have to watch it to understand the whole thing. But he said, you know, the guy in front of me said, well, who doesn't like cheese? And so I had to, you know, just tap him, and I had to replace him and start continuing the conversation. And I said, I'll tell you who doesn't like cheese. And that's all the vegans in the audience right now. And so that ended up being, you know, everyone died laughing at that just because I said something relevant that everyone gets, you know, that's kind of a funny thing that, you know, vegans don't eat cheese, and it's just a matter of being relevant. So that's what comedy is. It's not about necessarily being clever, but being relevant. And the other thing is, that really helped me develop the courage and calm me down and being on stage is that no one looks stupid when they're having fun. So if you focus on having fun, and that goes along with being on stage, you know, presenting something, like, why not have fun and enjoy the moment that you have to share something that you care about? Like, have fun with that. And if you're having fun, then you're not going to look stupid, no matter how you sound or if you mess up a word, you're just having fun. So that was a big lesson that allowed me to have fun up there instead of overthinking of what I needed to say.
Sure. Now, fast forward since 2011, you've actually partnered with a very, very well-known entrepreneur, investor, right? And you're going through one of their programs. Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why don't you talk to us about, you know, a major milestone that you guys hit, and we're really proud of you. It's really exciting, and it's going to be a great opportunity for you.
Yeah, definitely. So we just got accepted into the launch incubator in San Francisco. And so Jason Calacanis is the guy who created that incubator, and he invests $100,000 into each company that's accepted in there. And so for those of you who don't know Jason Calacanis, he's one of the first investors in Uber, Thumbtack, Calm, the meditation app. So he's invested and gotten in really early with a few different unicorn companies. And so it's really exciting that he sees that type of potential with our company as well, as we step into our seed fundraising. And so the purpose of heading out to San Francisco for this is to fundraise and to get connected with people who are, you know, going to be able to really help us level up in this space.
Very cool. How did you go about getting into that kind of opportunity?
So I'm friends with Kristen Wiley, and she, from Statosphere, she's also an Orlando entrepreneur, and she got accepted to it earlier this year. So that's how the incubator got on my radar. And she suggested that I apply because, we're kind of in what he calls the Goldilocks zone, which is not too hot, not too cold. So he likes companies when they're in that 10 to 20K monthly recurring revenue. So he can get in before those types of companies really take off. And so we were kind of in that sweet spot. So we applied, got through to the interview stage, flew out there and interviewed for it, and were accepted. So really excited to get that started. And we're heading out there at the end of October.
Very cool. Yeah, we're really proud of you guys and what Kristen's doing, and really cool stuff going on here in Orlando. You know, we are really generating some an amazing products and amazing people. So as you're building this, you said you're going out there to meet some great people, to learn more about, you know, how to build and scale a business, but also fundraising. What does that look like, fundraising, for, you know, people in the audience who have never fundraised before?
So I might be in a similar boat to most of those people who are listening who haven't done it before. I'm really just stepping into this for the first time. I was initially really romantic about the idea of not fundraising and growing it through bootstrapping, which is what I did the first few years. And I think that there are plenty of businesses that can do it that way. Particularly for the business that I'm in now, we're definitely going to need to raise capital to really ramp this thing up. And so, so I'm learning a lot as we go through, you know, learning a lot about convertible notes and how to pitch investors and, you know, put together financials and all that. And so, you know, it's interesting though. I am noticing that because we've got a pretty looking growth chart right now, that definitely helps a lot. Yeah. So that's been really beneficial. And, you know, it was interesting yesterday. I'm going through Starter Studio right now, the Seed Accelerator program. And we just had an investor showcase yesterday, and I made some great connections there, and there could be some things coming to fruition from that. But funny enough, there was one of our restaurant partners called me because his father is an investor, and he ended up got on a call this morning and said that he'd be willing to put in $250,000, depending on, you know, some of the terms and everything. So it's interesting how, again, some of those once you start putting yourself in a position and setting goals for things, some opportunities start to reveal themselves. Yeah. And so, so I don't know what'll happen with that, but definitely excited to go out to San Francisco and pitch and represent Orlando and give us some credibility out there and hopefully represent us well and in front of a lot of these investors. So I'll be learning a lot. So,
very cool.
I'll definitely come back and tell you what I learned when I get back.
If you could go back to 2011 and give yourself one piece of advice, right? What would that one piece of advice be? Now, it can't be a winning lotto number or anything ridiculous like that, but it's like an actionable piece of wisdom that you could go back and give yourself.
Yeah, there's so many things, right?
Just one.
I would say that it's really important to be really clear on the purpose of what you're doing, because I ran into a situation in 2013 where I was actually making pretty good money. It was kind of the peak of Party Tutor in the initial few years. It was probably making more money than it ever was before. But I was more depressed than I ever was before at the same time. And so when I first started Party Tutor and really had the idea to start a business, it was about creating financial freedom and making a ton of money. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that in particular, but that alone will set you on a path to some place that's not necessarily as fun as you think it might be. So I realized in 2013, as my passions started to misalign with what my company was doing, which was oftentimes promoting drink specials at the college bars and different, you know, events happening around campus. And as I had graduated at that point, and so my passions, you know, I wasn't necessarily serving myself anymore. It made sense when I was a college student and I was, you know, involved in a lot of those things, but my passion had changed. And so I actually drove back home, told my parents I was going to shut down the business because the money just didn't really matter at that point because it just wasn't fun for me anymore. And the money that I was making wasn't really changing my life too much or making me that much happier. So I figured I'd find something else to do. But the thing that my dad said when I drove back home was, you know, instead of throwing something away that you've worked so hard to build, why not try to use it for something positive? And so that really resonated with me. And I was like, that's actually a lot more logical than my emotional decision to just throw everything away.
You're ready to burn it all down.
Yeah, it was definitely an emotional kind of decision that I was, and just a really tough period that I was going through personally. And, but then that gave me a lot of hope, and I was, you know, and the app did have a lot of influence. So I was like, you know, I was thinking, you know, there probably is a way to steward this influence in a way that makes a positive impact. And so I'm going to figure out how to do that. And so ever since then, you know, the vision has been transformed in a lot of ways, and we are much more, you know, our mission right now is to create experiences that bring people together. And so what we're doing is, you know, we're creating experiences, we're creating offers at these bars, restaurants, entertainment venues that are giving people opportunities to hang out with their friends and to spend time together. And, you know, the suicide rate has increased at the same speed as the iPhone's popularity. And so I'm not saying that there's a direct correlation, but there's definitely something happening with technology and technology creating a lack of connection between people. And, but so we're trying to use technology to bridge that gap and to actually bring people together in a positive way.
You bring up a really good point. I talk with a lot of entrepreneurs, and for people listening in, here's the dark side of entrepreneurship. I have 17,000 connections on here, and I have 5,000 connections there on this social site, and I talk with entrepreneurs all day long. But entrepreneurship could be actually pretty lonely. And in this world of we're super connected, and we're always messaging each other, but there's a lack of face-to-face. And so your product is actually solving that. It's getting people face-to-face, belly-to-belly, and enjoying the environment together. Is that right?
Definitely. You know, it's definitely about being able to experience more of what your city has to offer, but also creating inspired interactions. You know, I hosted an event a scavenger hunt downtown about 2.5 years ago. And something that I learned through that is the power of what I call inspired interactions, which are essentially structured experiences that inspire people to interact with one another. And so, you know, if you think about the popularity of the different venues that are popping up, like Topgolf and its popularity, the reason that it's so popular is because it's providing this external activity that's making that social connection so much more dynamic and enjoyable, because you know, you're hitting balls, you're laughing about the score, you're playing different games, you're creating competitions, you've got servers coming up to you to ask you what you want to order, you've got comfortable couches around the area. And so it's creating this environment of social connection that a lot of bars aren't necessarily living up to, that type of experience that they're providing. And so at a bar, there's not very many inspired interactions. It's just you at the bar, drinks you can order, and then you need to find ways to create those conversations with your friends and people around you. And so things are heading in that direction to where we need to make it easier for and more enjoyable for people to connect with one another. Otherwise, people are going to keep defaulting into just sitting home and watching Netflix. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But I think that, you know, one of the most enjoyable things about life is our relationships and spending time with each other. That's what we're going to remember at the end of our lives, is our memories, our relationships, and our impact that we made. And so it's important to be conscious of what we're doing with our recreation time and how we're using it. And we're helping people steward that well, not only making it easier for people to find things to do, but also more affordable through the membership. And that allows people to go out more often and even creating a lot of economic impact in local cities as well.
This is really cool. So you're ready to burn it down. Went, talked to your dad, and he said, maybe you should look at turning, being a better steward of the influence that you've built. And it changed the trajectory of your business and yourself. What was it like in your terms of personal growth or personal development when you had that different mindset shift? Talk to us about like what happened in your own mind. I don't know the date that happened, but like, why don't you talk to us about like what changed after that in terms of your own personal growth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot that changed. I'm trying to think how to kind of summarize it in a simple way. I mean, maybe it's that I became more others focused rather than me focused. I think that I was very much me focused. It was about me making money, me creating financial freedom, me being able to travel the world. And once that didn't become really fulfilling or exciting or seem to be rewarding anymore, that the shift came from, you know, creating an impact in the world for others. And I think that's what has ultimately driven my passion and my enthusiasm and my vision for the future, has been, you know, thinking of the world, you know, what if it's like this, and how could that change how could that change and impact people? And I think, you know, part of it is from me being depressed and lonely and realizing how lonely I was. I didn't realize I was lonely until I had gotten in that period, because I had plenty of friends, but not real deep relationships. And so I've been a lot more intentional in going deeper with people and really allowing people to know who I am. And that's been really rewarding, and having friends who connect with me on that level and who encourage me to be more myself, and getting surrounded by those people has been really rewarding. And hopefully our platform is creating environments for people to live that out with their friends as well.
That's awesome, Brent. What books would you say, books or resources, would you say really helped create an impact in your success?
I think that everyone who hasn't read it, and especially those who haven't started a business yet, should read Rich Dad Poor Dad. Very common, you know, among entrepreneurs. That's the book that really set me off on, I have to be an entrepreneur. I don't have another choice, because once I realized those clear benefits between an employee and self-employed and being a business owner or an investor, it was just very clear that here in America, we've got the freedom to choose whatever we want to do. And if you're telling me that I have a choice between those two, I would rather take the right side of what he calls the cash flow quadrant. And so I just learned a ton in such a simple book from that book on just the benefits of entrepreneurship that were never taught to me. Or that I didn't really realize or pay attention to. And so that's like, and I hated reading too. I hated reading at that point, but I was desperate for a solution to my 9-to-5 nightmare. So someone had recommended that to me, and it really changed everything. I couldn't put it down. I started to try to fall asleep at 2 a.m. after the first day I was reading it. Couldn't fall asleep, finished the whole book at around 4 or 5 a.m. So if you haven't read that, you can read it pretty quickly. It's a very easy read. If you don't like reading like I did, not at that point in time, but I love reading now. So
sure. Awesome. So, where do you see the future of your business going? So you recently had a brand change and you're going after funding. Where do you see the future of your business Zup going?
Yeah. So Zup is, just kind of give people some clarity who are listening. Zup is a mobile app, and students are paying $4.99 a month to get access to exclusive deals and member-only experiences at their favorite bars, restaurants, and entertainment venues around campus. And so our next steps are to scale that platform that now has over 5,000 paying members at UCF, to scale that to 50 to 60 universities, large universities across the U.S., and then certainly expand beyond the college campus and make this a subscription that everyone could buy into and enjoy, that's going to allow them to experience more of what their city has to offer. And essentially, we're rewarding people for going out with friends, and those rewards are through these exclusive deals and giveaways and events. And, you know, you can kind of think about it, because some people aren't sure how big of a market this is, but if you think about credit cards, you know, unless you're using credit cards to go into debt, a lot of times we're using credit cards because if we're going to be spending money, we might as well get rewarded for it, right? And so we say, do I want this one or this credit card? And it's based on the rewards, the cash back or the complimentary flights and things like that. So this is similar in the sense of it's a monthly membership that's getting you access to those rewards, but you're getting instant rewards. You're not just getting 3% cash back, but you're getting a free drink at this bar, you're getting a free appetizer at this restaurant, you're getting $10 off tickets at a Dr. Phillips Center show. So, you know, there really needs to be a subscription that allows us to experience our city to the fullest.
I love it. So, what question should I have asked you that I didn't ask you?
You did pretty good. You did pretty good. And especially going off of what I said, you had the right follow-up questions for everything. We covered some good stuff.
You did good yourself.
Thank you. I don't know. Nothing immediately comes to me. I covered some of the main mistakes when I started out. I'm not sure.
All right. No worries. Yeah. So if people listening in want to know more about Zup and connect with you and have a conversation, cheer you on, maybe invest in your business or subscribe to your business, how can people find you?
Yeah. So you can, and anyone could email me at brent@zupapp.com. So the app currently is still called Party Tutor. We're going through a rebranding process right now where it'll be called Zup. That's Z-U-P-P. So we're going through that rebranding if anyone has any ideas, suggestions, feedback, or just wants to connect, brent@zupapp.com is a good way to do it.
Cool. And what's your website?
Zupapp.com is the website for the app. So again, we'll be tweaking that website soon, but that's where people will be able to find us in the future.
Are you using Microsoft Word to do this website? Or
definitely not. I'm a big Sketch fan now, so I've definitely stepped my design skills up from 2011, fortunately.
Awesome. Well, hey, Brent, this has been a really fun conversation. Thank you for your transparency and just for all the cool things that you're doing and lifting up universities and creating inspired interactions with people, for bringing people together. So thank you for coming on the show and sharing your journey with us. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, and I love what you guys are doing. Appreciate you supporting the community, and keep it up. We're gonna make this thing happen in Orlando.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, listening into this Orlando Entrepreneurs Podcast show, thank you for being a fan. And my ask to you is that you reach out to our guests and say, hey, we heard you on the show, and thank you for what you're doing, and just let our guests know that they're doing a great job, and give them hope, inspiration, and support for what they're doing. So that's my ask of you guys. And until then, we'll talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.